Chapter 99. With the fragrance still upon his spirit, I am tired of waiting for that man to get old. Sincerely yours, S50. See, Mark Twain was in his 70th year, old neither in mind nor body, but willing to take life more quietly, to refrain from travel and gay events. A sort of pioneer's reunion was to be held on the Pacific coast, and a letter from Robert Fulton, of Reno, Nevada, invited Clemens to attend. He did not go, but he sent a letter that we may believe was the next best thing to those who heard it read. To Robert Fulton, in Reno, Nevada. In the Mountains, May 24, 1905. Dear Mr. Fulton, I remember, as if it were yesterday, that when I disembarked from the overland stage in front of the Ormsby in Carson City in August, 1861, I was not expecting to be asked to come again. I was tired, discouraged, white with alkali dust, and did not know anybody. And if you had said then, cheer up, desolate stranger, don't be downhearted, pass on, and come again in 1905, you cannot think how grateful I would have been, and how gladly I would have closed the contract. Although I was not expecting to be invited, I was watching out for it, and was hurt and disappointed when you started to ask me, and changed it to, how soon are you going away? But you have made it all right now, the wound is closed. And so I thank you sincerely for the invitation. And with you, all Reno, and if I were a few years younger I would accept it, and promptly. I would go. I would let somebody else do the oration, but, as for me, I would talk, just talk. I would renew my youth, and talk and talk and talk and have the time of my life. I would march the unforgotten and unforgettable antiques by, and name their names, and give them reverent Highland farewell as they passed. Goodman, McCarthy, Gillis, Curry, Baldwin, Winters, Howard, Nye, Stewart, Neely Johnson, Hal Clayton, North, Root, and my brother, upon whom be peace. And then the desperados, who made life a joy and the laughter house a precious possession. Sam Brown, Farmer Pete, Bill Mayfield, Six-Fingered Jake, Jack Williams and the rest of the Crimson Discipleship and so on and so on. Believe me, I would start a resurrection that would do you more good to look at than the next one will, if you go on the way you are doing now. Those were the days. Those old ones. They will come no more. Youth will come no more. They were so full to the brim with the wine of life. There have been no others like them. It chokes me up to think of them. Would you like me to come out there and cry? It would not beseem my white head. Goodbye. I drink to you all. Have a good time and take an old man's blessing. Mark Twain. A few days later he was writing to H.H. Bancroft, of San Francisco, who had invited him for a visit in event of his coming to the coast. Henry James had just been there for a week, and it was hoped that Howells would soon follow. To H.H. Bancroft, in San Francisco. Up in New Hampshire, May 27, 1905. Dear Mr. Bancroft, I thank you sincerely for the tempting hospitalities which you offer me, but I have to deny myself, for my wandering days are over, and it is my desire and purpose to sit by the fire the rest of my remnant of life, and indulge myself with the pleasure and repose of work uninterrupted and unmarred by duties or excursions. A man who, like me, is going to strike 70 on the 30th of next November, has no business to be flitting around the way Howells does, that shameless old fictitious butterfly. But if he comes, don't tell him I said it, for it would hurt him, and I wouldn't brush a flake of powder from his wing for anything. I only say it in envy of his indestructible youth, anyway. Howells will be 88 in October. With thanks again, sincerely yours, S50. See, Clemens found that the air of the New Hampshire hills agreed with him, and stimulated him to work. He began an entirely new version of The Mysterious Stranger, of which he already had a bulky and nearly finished manuscript, written in Vienna. He wrote several hundred pages of an extravaganza entitled, 3,000 Years Among the Microbes, and then, having got a superabundant vitality reduced, it was likely to expend itself in these weird mental exploits. He settled down one day, and wrote that really tender and beautiful little, Eve's Diary, which he had begun, or at least planned, the previous summer at Tyringham. In a letter to Mr. Frederick A. Danica, general manager of Harper & Brothers, he tells something of the manner of the story, also his revised opinion of Adam's diary, written in 93, and originally published as a souvenir of Niagara Falls. To Frederick A. Danica, in New York. Dublin, July 16, 05. Dear Mr. Danica, I wrote Eve's diary, she using Adam's diary as her unwitting and unconscious text, of course, since to use any other text would have been an imbecility. Then I took Adam's diary and read it. It turned my stomach. It was not literature, yet it had been literature once before I sold it to be degraded to an advertisement of the Buffalo Fair. I was going to write and ask you to melt the plates and put it out of print. But this morning I examined it without temper, and saw that, if I abolished the advertisement it would be literature again. So I have done it. I have struck out 700 words, and inserted 5 MS pages of new matter, 650 words, and now Adam's diary is damn good, 60 times as good as it ever was before. I believe it is as good as Eve's diary now. No, it's not quite that good, I guess, but it is good enough to go in the same cover with Eve's. I'm sure of that. I hate to have the old Adam go out anymore. Don't put it on the presses again. Let's put the new one in place of it. And next Christmas, let us bind Adam and Eve in one cover. They score points against each other, so, if not bound together, some of the points would not be perceived. P.S. Please send another Adam's diary, so that I can make 2 revised copies. Eve's diary is Eve's love story, but we will not name it that. Ears ever, Mark. The peacemaking at Portsmouth between Japan and Russia was not satisfactory to Mark Twain, who had fondly hoped there would be no peace until, as he said, Russian liberty was safe. One more battle would have abolished the waiting chains of millions upon millions of unborn Russians, and I wish it could have been fought. He set down an expression of his feelings for the Associated Press, and it invited many letters. Charles Francis Adams wrote, "It attracted my attention, because it so exactly expresses the views I have myself all along entertained." Clemens was invited by Colonel George Harvey to dine with the Russian emissaries, Baron Rosen and Sergius Witt. He declined, but his telegram so pleased Witt that he asked permission to publish it and announced that he would show it to the Tsar. Telegram. To Colonel George Harvey, in New York. To Colonel Harvey, I am still a cripple, otherwise I should be more than glad of this opportunity to meet the illustrious magicians who came here equipped with nothing but a pen, and with it have divided the honors of the war with the sword. It is fair to presume that in 30 centuries history will not get done admiring these men who attempted what the world regarded as impossible and achieved it. Witt would not have cared to show the Tsar the telegram in its original form, which follows. Telegram unsent to Colonel George Harvey, in New York. To Colonel Harvey, I am still a cripple, otherwise I should be more than glad of this opportunity to meet those illustrious magicians who with the pen have annulled, obliterated, and abolished every high achievement of the Japanese sword, and turned the tragedy of a tremendous war into a gay and blithesome comedy. If I may, let me in all respect and honor salute them as my fellow humorists, I taking third place, as becomes one who was not born to modesty, but by diligence and hard work is acquiring it. Mark. Nor still another unsent form, perhaps more characteristic than either of the foregoing. Telegram unsent to Colonel George Harvey, in New York. Dear Colonel, no, this is a love feast. When you call a lodge of sorrow, send for me. Mark. To Mrs. Crane, Quarry Farm. Dublin, September 24, 05. Susie dear, I have had a lovely dream. Livy, dressed in black, was sitting up in my bed here at my right hand looking as young and sweet as she used to do when she was in health. She said, Colin, what is the name of your sweet sister? I said, Pamela. H, yes, that is it. I thought it was naming a name which has escaped me. Auntie, write it down for me. I reached eagerly for a pen and pad, laid my hands upon both, then said to myself, it is only a dream, and turned back sorrowfully, and there she was, still. The conviction flamed through me that our lamented disaster was a dream, and this a reality. I said, how blessed it is, how blessed it is, it was all a dream, only a dream. She only smiled, and did not ask what dream I meant, which surprised me. She leaned her head against mine, and I kept saying, I was perfectly sure it was a dream, I never would have believed it wasn't. I think she said several things, but if so they are gone from my memory. I woke and did not know I had been dreaming. She was gone. I wondered how she could go without my knowing it, but I did not spend any thought upon that. I was too busy thinking of how vivid and real was the dream, that we had lost her, and how unspeakably blessed it was to find that it was not true, and that she was still ours and with us. S. 50. See, one day, that summer Mark Twain received a letter from the actress, Minnie Mattern Fisk, asking him to write something that would aid her in her crusade against bullfighting. The idea appealed to him. He replied at once to Mrs. Fisk. Dear Mrs. Fisk, I shall certainly write the story, but I may not get it to suit me, in which case it will go in the fire. Later I will try again and yet again and again. I am used to this. It has taken me 12 years to write a short story, the shortest one I ever wrote, I think. Probably a death disc. So do not be discouraged. I will stick to this one in the same way. Sincerely yours, S. 50. Clemens. He did not delay in his beginning, and a few weeks later was sending word to his publisher about it. To Frederick A. Danica, in New York. October 2, 05. Dear Mr. Danica, I have just finished a short story which I greatly admire, and so will you horse's tail about 15,000 words, at a rough guess. It has good fun in it, and several characters, and is lively. I shall finish revising it in a few days or more, then John will type it. Don't you think you can get it into the January and February numbers, and issue it as a dollar booklet just after the middle of January, when you issue the February number? It ought to be ably illustrated. Why not sell simultaneous rights, for this once, to the Ladies' Home Journal or Collier's, or both, and recoup yourself? For I would like to get it to classes that can't afford Harper's. Although it doesn't preach, there's a sermon concealed in it. Dear sincerely, Mark. 5 days later he added some rather interesting facts concerning the new story. To F. A. Danica, in New York. October 7, 1906. 05, Dear Mr. Danica, dot, I've made a poor guess as to number of words. I think there must be 20,000. My usual page of MS. Contains about 130 words, but when I am deeply interested in my work and dead to everything else, my handwriting shrinks and shrinks until there's a great deal more than 130 on a page. Oh, yes, a deal more. Well, I discover, this morning, that this tale is written in that small hand. This strong interest is natural, for the heroine is my daughter, Susie, whom we lost. It was not intentional, it was a good while before I found it out. So I am sending you her picture to use and to reproduce with photographic exactness the unsurpassable expression and all. May you find an artist who has lost an idol. Take as good care of the picture as you can, and restore it to me when I come. I hope you will illustrate this tale considerably. Not humorous pictures. No. When they are good or bad, one's humor gets no chance to play surprises on the reader. A humorous subject illustrated seriously is all right, but a humorous artist is no fit person for such work. You see, the humorous writer pretends to absolute seriousness when he knows his trade. Then for an artist to step in and give his calculated gravity all away with a funny picture, oh, my land. It gives me the dry gripes just to think of it. It would be just about up to the average comic artist's intellectual level to make a funny picture of the horse kicking the lungs out of a traitor. Hang it, the remark is funny because the horse is not aware of it, but the fact is not humorous, it is tragic, and it is no subject for a humorous picture. Could I be allowed to sit in judgment upon the pictures before they are accepted, at least those in which Kathy may figure? This is not essential. It is but a suggestion, and it is hereby withdrawn, if it would be troublesome or cause delay. I hope you will reproduce the cat pile, full page, and save the photo for me in as good condition as possible. When Susie and Clara were little tots, those cats had their profoundest worship, and there is no duplicate of this picture. These cats all had thundering names, or inappropriate ones furnished by the children with my help. One was named Buffalo. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.